Welcome to Cascadia News Now. I'm Dave Willingham. This week, a conversation with James Erb, running for Whatcom County Prosecutor.
First, Stephanie, thank you very much for having me here today. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and meet with you and talk about this campaign and this race. I think it's critically important for our community. And as you said, this is the first time, perhaps, that we will have an open seat since 1974. And so that's a long time ago. I've lived here in Whatcom County since 2007, and I tell people that I've had the same prosecutor here since I moved to Whatcom County. But that would also be true if I was born in Whatcom County, that we would have had the same prosecutor for my whole life. So it's quite a long time, and I think that the community is ready to see a real change in the prosecutor's office.
And I'm assuming that one has to be an attorney in order to run for this position. It may be one of the only positions that you have to have a professional qualification for.
That's absolutely correct. The qualifications do include that you have to be licensed by the Washington State Bar Association to practice law in the state of Washington. And I am licensed. I've been licensed since 2008. And I've been practicing law since 2005.
And you've been practicing law in Bellingham?
That's right. I've practiced in Bellingham for the city of Bellingham since 2010 in the city attorney's office. Prior to that, I worked for the Nooksack Indian Tribe for a couple of years. And before I moved to Washington, I was a prosecutor down in the state of Florida in the 10th Judicial Circuit for about 3 years.
And what brought you to Washington State?
My lovely wife, Heather, was born on Salt Spring Island in British Columbia. And after we met at the same job, she's also a former prosecutor, a terrific prosecutor. And when we met and began seeing each other romantically, she said she was going to move from where we were in Polk County, Florida, to Bellingham, Washington. I'd never been to Bellingham, Washington. It was a foreign place to me, but I said, if you're moving there, that's where I'm going to go. And so we moved here in a sight unseen and with no job. I had no job when I moved here, and I like to tell people that it wasn't the most responsible decision I've ever made in my life, but it was certainly the smartest decision I've ever made.
Fair enough, and nice plug for Bellingham there. Way to go, James. So most of us have never had the chance to have a real race for county prosecutor and may not know. You said it is hugely important and critical race for those of us who don't know. What exactly would you be doing, and why is it so critical for us to know about it?
Well, I think that most of the community members I've had the chance to speak with so far, and I've been out meeting with people to talk about this race since probably September or October. I was recruited to run against Mr. McEachran last summer. Took a little while making my decision, but ultimately I decided to do that before he surprised me by saying that he thought he was ready to hang it up. But in all those conversations that I've had with people in the community, there is a lot of anxiety for change, particularly around the new jail, criminal justice reform issues, the work of the task force that's been going on since 2015. It's kind of shined a spotlight on the way that we approach criminal justice here in Whatcom County. And people are ready to see us try something different.
And what is your position on a new jail?
Well, I'm proud to say I voted against the jail twice, like a lot of other people did. I think that the idea of building a large correctional facility way outside the city of Bellingham at this juncture doesn't make any sense. What I tell people a lot of times is that I feel we're putting the cart before the horse to build a very large facility, a very expensive facility, when we don't exactly know what our jail needs are. And the reason why I say that is because the work of the task force and the Vera Institute for Justice over the last couple of years.
Tell people who don't know about the task force and the Vera Institute report a little bit about those.
Sure. So Whatcom County established the task force on jail, incarceration reduction and prevention task force back in 2015 to look at ways that we can safely reduce the jail population. And so the task force worked with the Vera Institute for Justice, which is a nationally recognized kind of criminal justice think tank, and if you will, to study criminal justice and the jail population here in Whatcom County and to develop some concrete recommendations for things that we can do to safely reduce the number of people in our jail. And so some of those things at a high level include providing more mental health treatment for example, to people who are suffering from mental illness rather than incarcerating them in the jail, to provide more substance abuse treatment to people who are suffering from drug abuse and opioid abuse disorder and things of those nature, rather than having them just sitting in the jail and incarcerating them. And there's a cycle there where drug offenders will be arrested, they'll be sentenced, they'll be released, they'll be caught again, arrested, sentenced, released, and we spend a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of energy incarcerating these people rather than giving them the help they need to get better. So those are two of the big picture things that we need to work on, is to treat people that have illness rather than lock them up. And then one of the other things that is striking from the task force work is that on any given day, about 59% of the average population of the jail are there on a pretrial basis.
What does that mean?
What that means is that these are people who have been charged but not yet convicted of any crime. And so frequently they're there because they can't afford to post bail to get out of jail.
I was just going to say, can't they just pay bail?
Right. And they, in almost all cases, have a bail amount that has been set for them by the judge, but these people most times cannot make that bail. So they sit in jail until their charges are resolved one way or the other.
Is setting a bail amount, I believe that a judge has discretion, but isn't that the state that sets that range?
Yes, that's a great question. And so how it works is when a defendant appears for their first appearance in their preliminary kind of bail hearing, the state will make a recommendation as to bail, and that number could be anywhere from, you know, $250 up to $1 million. It really depends on what the state feels is appropriate in any given circumstance, and they have, you know, likely a matrix that they use depending on the severity of the charges. Maybe it'll also incorporate whether or not the person's employed, whether or not they own a home or they're a renter, or how long they've lived in our community. And there are a bunch of different factors that they'll bring to bear to make a recommendation to the judge. And then the defense attorney will make their own recommendation to the judge, and the judge will get to set the amount. And oftentimes that amount falls somewhere within those two divergent recommendations, right? So maybe you have a $100,000 bail recommendation by the state and a personal recognizance release recommendation by the defense attorney or something at the lower end of the range, and the judge will just split the difference and say, well, we'll do $50,000 bail. And the way the bail system works is if the defendant can go to a bail bondsman and post about 10% of that bail amount, then the bail bondsman will be responsible for the difference, and that person can get out of jail as they await the resolution of their criminal charges. But I think there was an article written, I believe, by the New York Times a couple of years ago that pointed out that most people in the United States, they don't have $400 in their checking account to make an emergency bill, right? So if their car breaks down or the water heater breaks or things like that, a lot of people don't have that kind of liquid asset lying around. So the bail amounts, I mean, even if they're relatively small for many people in our community, they may as well have no bail because they can't afford to get out, even if it's a small amount.
As a city prosecutor right now, is that something when you're asking to set bail that you weigh somebody's potential in doing harm versus what their circumstances are? Do you feel that you try to be lenient to people who don't have?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I should clarify that I'm not currently working as a criminal prosecutor for the city of Bellingham. I did that when I first started with the city, but I've been working on the civil side since 2010. However, the city council, the mayor, and the municipal court judge, as well as the city attorney's office, are all keenly aware of these issues. And the city of Bellingham has made great strides in reducing the number of people that it is holding on simply just a cash bail situation where people just can't afford to get out of bail. And those recommendations are routinely made.
So let's get back to the whole jail issue, which there's a lot to unpack, as you said. The Vera report, I believe, implied that there was some pretty gross imbalance in terms of mental health issues of people with mental health issues that are in the county jail. Their cases are not moving forward. In the meantime, they're not receiving services. What I've heard from people in police force on the county and city level is that the state has not provided services and programs for people with mental health issues, and sometimes there's nowhere else to go. There's nowhere else to take people. How can you make a difference as a county prosecutor with all of these hurdles?
Well, first I would say that it is a definite problem. The shortage of available mental health treatment for people in our community that are sick and that are suffering mental illness is a serious problem, and we need to address this problem. And I cannot do that by myself, but I can work with other leaders and other stakeholders in the community to address this problem. And one of the things that I think we need to do in order to do that is to refocus our priorities, right? Former president or former vice president Joe Biden was fond of saying, you know, don't tell me what your priorities are, show me your budget. And I will tell you what your priorities are. Well, for the last few years, our projected budget at the county has included a very large line item for a very big correctional facility out in Ferndale. And so that is one way that we can spend our money that shows what our priorities are, which is incarcerating people. I think we need to reevaluate how we're going to spend that money and say, let's divert some of those resources that might go to building a big correctional facility and instead invest in more mental health treatment. And that has begun happening already. The county is getting ready to break ground on a new triage facility over in the Iron Gate area that will include some beds for mental health treatment. And it is a step in the right direction, but it is unfortunately a very small step.
So you have some specific positions and you want to make a difference on the county priorities in terms of jail and how we approach this. Can you make much of a difference as a county prosecutor? Have you thought about running for a county councilman?
I believe that the county prosecutor is the person in our county who is most responsible for what criminal justice looks like in Whatcom County. The county prosecutor has the prosecutorial discretion to decide what cases they're going to bring and not bring. The county prosecutor is responsible for charging all felony cases that occur anywhere in Whatcom County, as well as the non-felony misdemeanor level cases that occur in unincorporated Whatcom County. And they file thousands of cases every year. And every case is an opportunity to take a closer look at how we're operating our criminal justice system here in Whatcom County. I've been talking to people lately about the new jail and the proposed facility, and we talk about things like mass incarceration at the national level for Democrats or even at the state level, and reducing mass incarceration is a goal that everyone has, but it's also a goal that I think a lot of people believe is something that occurs other places. But I look at our situation here in Whatcom County with an overcrowded and failing jail, and I look at that as a symptom of mass incarceration rather than the problem itself. So let's address the underlying policies and practices that have resulted in this explosion in our inmate population over the last few decades and see if we can do something to address that and reverse that trend.
It sounds like you might be somewhat of a softie. There may be some concern that you will be too soft on crime. How would you address that question?
I think that my experience as a special prosecutor in Florida prosecuting sexually motivated crimes against children shows that I'm not a softie, as you say, that I understand. I go into this campaign and I would go into this job with my eyes wide open. There are dangerous people in our community who commit serious offenses. And the first and most important priority of the county prosecutors is to ensure public safety. And I have the skills and the ability to do that. And that would be, of course, my first priority, is ensuring public safety. And beyond that, I think there's a vast ocean of opportunity for us to do things a little bit differently around those individuals and people that we're incarcerating that is not adding or securing our public safety. It's just a very ineffective and costly use of tax dollars to incarcerate people rather than give them the help that they need.
One more question about the jail. You just brought up that our jail is overcrowded, and yes, there are enormous systemic issues behind that that maybe we as a nation are trying to unpack or as a state. Meanwhile, the strong argument in favor of jail now no matter what is that our jail is overcrowded, is that the conditions for people in the jail are horrific and people are not treated well or don't have enough beds or don't have enough space. Another argument in favor of jail right now, no matter what, is that the cost of building a jail goes up every year. How would you address those concerns?
Sure. And I think that the first concern that you mentioned is we have to build the jail now because the current jail is failing. Even if we broke ground on a jail right now, it would take quite a while before it's built. And we're not ready to break ground on a jail right now. The problems that I'm suggesting that we deal with did not start recently. They did not begin after the jail vote failed in 2015, much less after the jail vote failed in 2017. Our approach to criminal justice in this county has remained largely unchanged since the early 1970s. And I think what we need to do is look at this as an opportunity to change our approach. And if we elect a progressive prosecutor or a prosecutor with progressive values, such as myself, who's willing to implement some of the reforms and the changes that have been recommended by the task force, I think we can quickly see a drop in that average daily population in the jail. I think we can get some people who can safely be removed from the jail out of that facility and see a little bit of an easing of the stress that's currently on it as we decide what our jail needs really are and where is the best place to locate a new jail. Because I'm not convinced, based on the information I reviewed to date, that building a large facility out in Ferndale is the correct answer to this particular problem.
I know one of the concerns with a jail being out in the county is people being able to see and communicate with their loved ones, and also getting representation, getting legal representation out there as effectively. Not that Ferndale is hugely far away, but it makes it inconvenient, particularly if people are dependent on public transportation. Meanwhile, people who have been charged are sometimes being sent to Yakima, which seems to be maybe much worse.
Those are great points. Yeah, and I had a meeting last week with a couple of local criminal defense attorneys who mentioned that even now, with the jail the way it is, there are hearings that take place via closed circuit television where, you know, the defendant and the defense attorney are in one room and the prosecutor and the judge are in another room and they're communicating via closed circuit TV, and it's grossly inefficient. And those inefficiencies would only grow if they located the new facility out in Ferndale. And it creates some real challenges for people in terms of getting their representation and getting their attorneys to drive out to the jail to meet with them and things of that nature. And of course, Ferndale is much closer than Yakima. And so we're dealing with those issues at the city level where we are having inmates transported to Yakima. That policy raises also more questions for us. I mean, for example, the cost to incarcerate an inmate in Yakima is, I think, $47 to $49 per day versus well over $100 per day here in Whatcom County.
Why is that cost so different?
That is a great question, and that's something I would like to understand a little bit better.
And that relates to a question that my co-host Tim Johnson brings up quite frequently, that Skagit built a jail and it seemed to come way under the wire of what our expenses would be for a jail. Why is that?
That's also a great question. And these are the types of questions that I think we need to answer before we say, okay, we're starting this jail project again. I think there are a lot of unanswered questions. A lot of the voters felt that there were unanswered questions about the proposal, or that it was too expensive, or that the location was wrong, or that the size was too big. I think there's a multitude of reasons why people voted against this idea, not once, but twice. And unfortunately, our leadership, our elected leaders, did not get the message the first time around, right? So there was a second proposal that was largely similar to the first proposal, and the voters were not persuaded that it was a take it or leave it offer, and they said they were going to leave it. So we have an opportunity to look at this issue again to figure out what is the best answer to this particular problem, and we need to figure it out and get it right. We only get one chance to get it right.
You're listening to Cascadia News Now on KMRE FM, and James Erm is a city attorney at this time. That's fair, even though you're not a city prosecutor. Is that correct?
That's fair.
Running for county prosecutor seat, which is an open contested race for the first time since Nixon, I think. And you started talking about some systemic issues, so I want to bring up another systemic issue. I'm not sure how much you have influence or you would have influence on this. There's been a lot of criticism nationally about police, but also locally. That ties in, I think, with some racial bias found by the Vera report, but also some concern that both our city and county police may show racial bias. Is that something that you can address, or how would you address that?
I believe that that is a serious problem in our society that has been highlighted and spotlighted over the last couple of years, so I agree with that statement. I have not seen, however, the evidence that shows that that is a problem here in our community. I understand that there are some people in our community that believe that is a very significant problem, but I have not seen the data that backs up that concern. I've seen more anecdotal evidence that that is a concern than I have seen the hard data. And I'm a person who thinks that we make better decisions when we make our decisions based on data. And part of the problem here is just that the data is not adequately recorded by our law enforcement agencies or by the prosecutor's office. And so that is something that I think we need to focus more on to make sure that we're collecting the appropriate data to be able to spot these problems when they're occurring and implement solutions to fix them.
One thing we do have hard data on is our own state, against the wishes of our Attorney General. Our Department of Licensing ended up freely giving information about undocumented citizens to ICE, and also certain businesses in our state have done that as well. We have a strong immigrant population in our county. As a county prosecutor, how would you work with Border Patrol and ICE, and B, how would you work with immigrant populations, and how would you work to protect people?
I do not believe that it is the job of local law enforcement to enforce federal immigration law or arguably unconstitutional federal immigration policies that might be brought forward by any particular administration. I don't think that the law supports that. In fact, the law is quite clear in the opposite direction, that local law enforcement agencies can't be more or less deputized to enforce federal law. And so that is quite clear, and that would be my position as the county prosecutor. That's just not our job.
Do you think that our county should be a sanctuary county?
I'm not sure how to answer that question, quite honestly. I think that it's a good debate to have. But I'm not sure that that would be a policy that the prosecutor could put into place.
In a related story, we are in a situation where, as I'm sure you know, three protesters are being prosecuted. But it's, as far as I understand it, it's by the state, but there's also a county component. And that there's been a whole Facebook component in that there was a successful warrant that turned over all kinds of information of everyone who liked the Facebook page in regard to the Red Line Salish Sea. I'd like you to just weigh in on the whole situation for starters.
I read the article I believe it was The Intercept, about the warrants to Facebook and the subpoenas to Facebook.
What is The Intercept?
The Intercept is a website that was started by Glenn Greenwald and others to kind of shed a spotlight on issues in government that they felt that people should be more aware of. I think it started after Edward Snowden came forward with his disclosures about governmental misconduct, and it's kind of taken off from there. And now they have just a series of writers that write on the website and publish articles of public interest regularly. And so I read the article on The Intercept about the Facebook protester case, and it explained in detail how the first couple of times our county prosecutor approached Facebook with a subpoena to get records about the protest, Facebook said no. And then on the second time when they said no, they suggested that the prosecutor's office contact the Department of Justice for help in drafting the subpoena in a way that Facebook would honor it. And so that was what our prosecutor's office did. And I think prosecutor's office spent the better part of a year working on getting these records from Facebook about individuals in our community for the purposes of prosecuting these protesters. And so I've not had the opportunity to review the reports that were drafted by law enforcement agencies that came out of their investigation that resulted in these prosecutions. But my understanding is that these individuals were charged with misdemeanor offenses after a year and untold number of hours and expense in trying to gather this information, including information that may or may not have been protected by people's constitutional right to privacy here in Washington State, which is very, very strong right that is explicit in our state constitution. And so I have serious concerns about violating people's right to privacy to prosecute any crimes, let alone misdemeanor level offenses.
So, James Erb, you are successfully elected to be county prosecutor. The state approaches you to help them prosecute protesters. How do you handle that situation?
Well, I would like to understand what the crime is that we're going to be prosecuting people for. As you well know, as a media person and a journalist, people have a First Amendment right to speak out on issues of importance, including including opposing an oil pipeline or proposed oil pipeline that some people, maybe even most people, think will ultimately be harmful to the environment, to the planet. And so I think people have a right to make those comments and to make those statements and to object to that type of thing. At some point, are people going to be crossing the line from engaging in protected First Amendment activity to committing a crime? Sometimes that line can be a little bit blurry, and we need to figure out where that line is. But I want to make sure that people are free to engage in their constitutionally protected activities.
Absolutely. So Dave McEachran has, as we said, been our county prosecutor since Methuselah and has mostly gone unchallenged, it seems like, the occasional dog aside. What is it about his approach that you want to change as a county prosecutor?
Well, first, I think it's important to recognize that Mr. McEachran, while I disagree with his politics, has served his community since 1974. And that is a very long time. And he's had some very good successes over the 44 years that he's served in that office and in that position. And I think we should all thank him for being willing to serve the public for so long. There are some systemic issues that come to bear on why he's run unchallenged for four decades. And that's not something that's specific to Whatcom County. That happens across the country. There are two populations of attorneys, and as we talked about earlier in the interview, you have to be an attorney to run for county prosecutor, and there are two populations of attorneys that are more than likely to run for county prosecutor. Most of those people work in the county prosecutor's office, and it is quite rare to see somebody challenge the sitting county prosecutor as a deputy to try to run against them. And then the other population is the criminal defense bar. And oftentimes, they're reluctant to challenge the sitting deputy or sitting county prosecutor.
Is that because, obviously, if you're the deputy of the person and you challenge them, we may have seen that in other county departments, that could imply or implicate you, or maybe if it shouldn't affect your job after the fact, but it might. Is that also true? If you're a criminal prosecutor, it seems like that should be less of a concern.
I believe that that's the perception by a lot of people who choose not to run. whether or not that's true, I can't speak to that. But I think a lot of people have that perception or that belief, and that's why they choose not to throw their hat in the ring, so to speak.
So you've been here in Bellingham for a while, and you had already decided, I think you had filed with the public disclosure campaign before McEachran announced that he wasn't running again. Why was this year the year for you?
Well, I have been working in public service my entire career. I started out as an assistant or deputy state attorney in Florida, and then I worked for the Nooksack Indian Tribe for a couple of years, and I worked at the city of Bellingham now for 8 years. So I've always worked in public service, but I've always been more of a staff attorney type position than an elected person. But I think, like a lot of people across our country, in the general election in 2016, things shifted where we have a federal government and an executive who is out of control, for lack of a better word. And there's complete disregard for the rule of law, for ethics, for integrity, for the foundational principles of our republic. And like many people, I was angered and frustrated by that. And I did not feel that I was able to do do a whole lot to change what's going on at that level. And then I had friends approach me and tell me that they wanted me to run for county prosecutor. And I felt that, well, I can't change what's happening in Washington, D.C. I can change what's happening in my community. That this is something that I can do to make a difference, to make our community better for people who live here in Whatcom County, to make our community safer, stronger, for my family and for other families. And so that's why I decided to do this.
Ja! Boom! New adventures, new places, new sounds, new música. Each episode of The Latin Alternative is a journey into the ever-changing world of Latin rock, funk, hip-hop, electronic, and tropical music from faraway places you might never expect, perhaps even in your own backyard. Join me, Josh Norick, and my co-host, Ernesto Lechner, on The Latin Alternative.
Friday at 9 p.m.
on KMRE 102.3 FM, Bellingham.
James Erb is running for county prosecutor in Whatcom County. This is Cascadia News Now, and you are listening to KMRE 102.3 FM, Bellingham, KMRE.org, and in Van Zandt and Deming, KAVZ. So anybody who knows me knows that I kind of have a little professional crush on Bob Ferguson, our state attorney general. We have a little Fergie love fest on our show every once in a while, and he's been pretty much heroic on a national level. But he is elected to represent the state interests. Do you think he's an activist attorney? Do you think that that's something that a county prosecutor should be?
I think he's a good attorney general. I think that he has a lot of respect for the rule of law and for the rights of Washingtonians. And I think he's worked hard to safeguard people's rights. And he has certainly made a name for himself and developed quite a following as a leader in some of these areas in terms of, you know, resisting unconstitutional policies and actions by this administration in Washington, D.C. I mean, I think if you go to the Attorney General's website today, you'll see that they've been successful in 9 separate lawsuits against the Trump administration since he took office. And that's pretty good track record. So I think that he is doing an outstanding job, and I think he's a role model. And I would also say that Bob Ferguson is elected to represent not just the state interests, but the interests of every citizen here in Washington State. And the county prosecutor similarly is responsible for representing the interests of every person in Whatcom County. So while the county prosecutor provides civil legal advice to the county executive, for example, or to the county council, ultimately the county prosecutor is accountable to the people who live here in Whatcom County. They are his boss, or her boss, as it may be. And so I think that that's important to keep in mind, that when you're making those decisions aren't to benefit any one person or any one elected official, but they're really decisions that represent the best interests of everybody in our county.
And you're not the only person who has declared that they are running for this position. The other person is actually in the county office as a county prosecutor right now. How do you differentiate yourself, and how is your experience just as match or better match than somebody who's already a county prosecutor?
Yeah, well, I have not worked in that office for one day, whereas my opponent in this race has worked in that office for over 20 years, and he has served as the chief criminal deputy for the last several years. And so when I saw him speak to the Whatcom Young Democrats last month, he began by talking about the fact that he has not really produced any meaningful change over those 20 years, and that that while he disagrees with the position of his boss, the county prosecutor, on a number of issues, he's remained largely silent and done nothing to change any of those things in the time that he has been there. And so I think versus that type of experience, I represent real change and the opportunity for real change to come in from outside the office and to be willing to address these problems. As I said earlier, I was recruited to run against the incumbent, Mr. McEachran, and I was willing to do that, and I still am. So if Mr. McEachran were to change his mind next month and decide to file for the office one more time, I would remain in this race and run against him because I believe that these things are important to our community, and I think it is time for a real change. I also have 8 years of civil legal experience. We spent a lot of time talking about criminal justice issues and criminal justice reform, but the county prosecutor is also the civil legal advisor for the entire county. So the county prosecutor's office deals with things like, you know, contracts and interlocal agreements with other agencies around the county and the state. They deal with things like land use and growth management. We have had historical problems coming into compliance with the Growth Management Act. I don't believe we've done so as a county since the early 1990s when it was enacted. And that's a problem that needs to be addressed, right? And so I have 8 years of civil legal experience at the county dealing with some of these types of issues that I would bring to bear to the position, whereas my opponent doesn't have any of that experience. I also have the experience of having worked in separate jurisdictions, including the state, the tribe, and now the city, that take different approaches to criminal justice. And so I've seen things that work well. I've seen things that don't work so well. In fact, of the three criminal justice models that I have worked in and been a part of, the method that worked the least well was the kind of law and order, conservative, just lock them up type method that we use here in Whatcom County. We don't invest in alternatives like we could or like we should. We still continue to lock people up with mental health problems where we should be giving those people treatment. We don't provide access to the therapeutic drug court for the number of people that could benefit from that program and actually get help for their addiction. Instead, we incarcerate those people at a very high rate and at a high cost to our taxpayers. So one of the things that I would like to do if I'm elected is really fully commit to using the county's therapeutic drug court. We're in the midst of an opioid epidemic. This is a nationwide problem, and it's hurting families right here in Whatcom County. And we have this resource that we are just not using to the extent that we can. I think we have about 30 to 35 people in the program right now. According to the drug court administrator, we can accommodate 85 to 100 people in that program. And so we're vastly underutilizing that resource. And there are several concrete or practical steps that I would like to take to really use that resource and to get the benefit of that resource and get these people back on the right path, help them with their addictions and allow them to be contributing members to our community.
Bringing up the opioid crisis reminds me that we have another issue with legalized marijuana in our state with a federal possible crackdown. Where does that leave you or the county prosecutor?
Yeah, as I said earlier, I don't think it's the responsibility of local law enforcement to enforce federal law. And we have had, it's interesting because a lot of times it's the Republicans and the conservatives that are talking about states' rights and states' rights as being sacrosanct, and we don't want to infringe upon states' rights when the states are doing things that maybe don't align with what the federal executive wants to see happen. And so now here, the inverse is true. We have states that are trying to exercise their rights to govern their own citizens in a different way than the federal government, which many people would say is kind of out of touch with the substance abuse problem that we have in this country. And so I would say, hands off. we're dealing with this in Washington the way that we have chosen to deal with this as a state. And we don't need you coming in with a heavy-handed approach from outside, from the federal government, to try to take over and enforce federal law when we're doing just fine.
Hi there. I'm Sam Waldron, your host on 45 RPM, music of the 40s and 50s. Every week we'll hear the big bands, rock and roll, jazz, beautiful love songs, and stories behind the music and the performers. Join me Mondays at 7 p.m. and Wednesdays at 4 p.m. for 45 RPM on KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham.
The Rockin' for the Restore benefit concert is coming May 18th at Boundary Bay at 5 p.m. The benefit features live music by the legendary Chucklenuts and High Mountain String Band, There will be a raffle and silent auction to support the Restore's efforts to combat joblessness in Whatcom County. The Rockin' for the Restore benefit concert happens May 18th at Boundary Bay at 5 p.m. Learn more at re-store.org. That's re-store.org.
This is Rosalinda Guillen with Community to Community Development, and you are listening to KMRE 102.3 FM in Bellingham. Your community, your voice, your station.
You're listening to James Erb, who is running for county prosecutor in Whatcom County on Cascadia News Now. James, we talked earlier about working with the police. I think one concern I'm thinking about what was supposed to be Initiative 990 and is now possibly Legislation 990 about police prosecution. Is there possibly a concern that as a prosecutor that you work more closely with police than city and county police than criminal attorneys, and might that color your ability to be fair going forward?
Well, first I would say that I have had good working relationships with law enforcement at every level and every position that I've had throughout my career. I respect law enforcement officers. They do a very difficult job. They put themselves and their lives on the line to enforce the law and to protect their communities. And so I applaud the vast majority of law enforcement officers who are doing just an outstanding job, doing their level best to keep us safe and to enforce the law. And I think that we should make sure that anytime we talk about this issue, we recognize that the vast majority of our cops are doing a great job. Unfortunately, just like in the general population, there's a small majority of people, or a small minority of people, I beg your pardon, who do things that they shouldn't do. And I think that those people should be held accountable for their misdeeds. And I don't think that there's any particular problem with holding those actors accountable. I don't think you can't just say with a broad brush, well, because I work with law enforcement officers, I'm never going to hold a law enforcement officer accountable. I don't think that that's the right approach. I think when people, whether they're a police officer, a politician, or a regular citizen, they do things wrong, they should be held to task for that.
I may take a little bit of issue with you only in that you said, like the rest of the public, there's a small minority. And my perspective is when you're in a position of power and when you're in a position where you have to be on guard all the time, that you maybe start seeing people as threats. And that's why I think issues like implicit bias training are even more important for law enforcement. And as 990, we hope will go forward one way or another, really mandates more mental health counseling, more training in terms of not shooting a deaf person in the back. Mm-hmm. And so I just have to take a little bit of issue with you that I think that there does need to be maybe some extra care given to people in that profession.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up, Stephanie. I do think that those things are great, great elements of the De-Escalate Initiative that I believe now has been signed into law. And I understand there might be some challenges that are pending with respect to that. But I do think that those are great initiatives. I think the de-escalation training is a great idea so that we're not, I mean, I don't want to incarcerate people with mental health problems. I certainly don't want to be using excessive force or, you know, anything like that against those individuals if we can possibly avoid that. Same thing for people suffering with substance abuse and things of that nature. And then implicit bias training is a great segue for me to talk about one of the other things that I would like to do with the county prosecutor's office, which is to increase the diversity of that office. We have 24 attorneys, give or take, in that office. I think 6 of those attorneys are women out of the 24. I don't think there's a particular one person of color amongst the ranks of the attorneys in the office. And I think that's been true for many years. And so I've worked with, I've met with a couple of people in the community who work on diversity issues to talk about how we're going to address that if I can be elected, and how we're going to recruit people to come in that would be more representative of our community, how we can increase the number of women that we're hiring as attorneys, because more women than men are graduating from law school and have been for many years. And yet that is not reflected in the current makeup of that office. And so I think those are things that we need to take a closer look at. And you mentioned implicit bias training, which is important. I heard Judge Raquel Montoya-Lewis speaking about this last month at the bar lunch. And the reality is now we have this law on the books that's going to require our law enforcement personnel to take that type of training so that they can recognize that in themselves and incorporate that into their decision-making processes. But we don't have any similar training for attorneys and for county prosecutors or for deputy county prosecutors.
Would you support legislation mandating that?
I'm not sure that legislation versus a court rule versus a policy or practice of a county prosecutor. I don't want to wait for the legislature to pass legislation to require us to do it. If I'm elected, I think it's something important that we should do.
That's true, but at the same token, we're not all Whatcom County.
That's true.
So, but it's good to hear you say that. And I remember, I don't know if this is currently the case, but I remember that there were few or none bilingual people in the county sheriff's office. And I don't know if there are Spanish-speaking people in the county prosecutor's office as well.
I can't answer that question.
But I'm sure that you will,
right,
if elected. This is a fascinating election year, even for people who don't pay attention to election years. We have a hotly contested race in the 40th. We have a hotly contested race with Chris Litton stepping down. That was the 40th. And then in the 42nd with against Doug Erickson. And a lot of attention is already being given way before the filing deadline. A lot of attention is being given to those races. You started off by saying that this is a crucial position. How are you going to get heard in all of these other big races? How are you going to reach people and convey, A, that this is an important race, and B, why?
I have a terrific team of people who are supporting me and helping me. I have a great campaign manager with experience, and our message to the voters is a great positive message of change, which is going to do great things for our community. It will lead to better outcomes for less money for everybody. And so I think that we have a really good message, a really positive message, and we're working hard to bring that message out to the community. We have a campaign website, which is www.votejamesherb.com. We have a Facebook page that also is facebook.com/votejamesherb. And we use those media to get out part of our message. We're going out into the community. We're doorbelling. We started doorbelling just this past Saturday in the York neighborhood in Bellingham. It was a lot of fun. I took my young boys with me. I called them my youth outreach coordinators. They're 5 and 7. And they had a great time. My son Sam, before he left the doorstep of every door, made sure to raise his finger in the air and say, "Don't forget, vote James Erb," you know. And so we're getting out there to meet with people where they are and talk about the issues that are most important to them. And the issue of criminal justice reform is really resonating in our community right now. There's been a spotlight on it since the jail vote back in 2015. There's been a lot of discussion about it at the local level. There's also a lot of discussion going on at the state level and the national level about what's going on with criminal justice and criminal justice reform. And so I think there's a movement out here that is really important and that we are going to try to just capitalize on that momentum and move forward with our positive message.
Yeah, it's certainly timely. Are there issues that you and I have not talked about that you are focused on or that you want people to know about?
Well, thank you for that question. I think we've talked about public safety being the most important job of the county prosecutor, getting it right when it comes to our new jail facility, regardless of where we're going to end up putting that new jail facility, because I have no preconceived notions about what we should or shouldn't do or where we should or shouldn't put that. I actually attended the jail listening session last week in Deming and heard a couple of citizens out there talking about the jail and what they wanted to see happen. And quite frankly, some of those folks said, "I'm never going to vote for something that's that expensive." You know, so that's something that we need to consider as well. We talked about the jail task force and their recommendations, which, I mean, those things are proven effective solutions to reduce the number of people in our jail. And these are not things that we need to study for another couple of years. These are things that we can start putting into place immediately to start driving down the number of people in our jail and reinvesting the resources we're currently using on incarceration on these other areas in terms of mental health treatment and substance abuse treatment. And then substance abuse treatment, of course, is my opportunity to talk about the drug court. And it's an outstanding program. We're just not using it to the extent that we could be. And so that's something that I really want to focus on. The last thing I would add is really kind of refocusing our relationship, or changing our relationship, if you will, between the county and the tribes. I had the opportunity to meet with the tribal leadership for the Lummi Nation, with Chairman Julius and the vice chairman. And we had a terrific meeting and lunch talking about some of the issues that they see and some of the problems that they have with the county prosecutor's office and the county sheriff's office particularly, and some of the things that they would
like
to see.
Can you give us for example?
Sure. So there are a couple of examples that they gave me, and I'd be happy to repeat those. And one is, and this gets back to the point you were making earlier about maybe possibly racial profiling, and that is the habit of ticketing tribal members that are driving out in their community sometimes when there's some flooding and the roads are covered in water, and then there's signage that goes up that says you can't drive through here. The water will recede, but the county's not as diligent about getting the signs down as they are about getting the signs up. And so frequently tribal members will be pulled over and stopped for going around or through a barricade when there's no safety danger in place there. So they will be stopped and they will be ticketed. And this happens with quite frequency. So that's something that I think we need to address in terms of the county sheriff's office and deal with that. There are issues around tribal fishing rights, where some of the tribal fishermen are stopped by state agencies for exercising their tribal fishing rights, and there may be disputes between tribes about where one particular tribe could be fishing versus another tribe, and those disputes should be handled by the tribe rather than in state court by the county prosecutor. And then there are also issues around juveniles and the prosecution of tribal members who are juveniles. Should those juveniles be handled in the tribal court system, or should they be handled in the state court system? And so those are things that we need to work on and develop a better system for dealing with, because there are some instances where it may make more sense for a juvenile to be prosecuted in state court, but oftentimes it may make more sense for them to be dealt with out in their own community. And so let's talk about that and figure out if there's a better way forward on those issues. So those are three of the examples that we talked about when we spoke that I thought were definitely things that we can work together on. And I'm proud to say that the Lummi Nation decided to endorse me in this race last month. So I'm pretty proud to have that support as well.
So it does sound like tribal sovereignty is something that you want to uphold.
Absolutely. I've worked in tribal country for 2 years. I have friends still who live in tribal country and represent their communities. And tribal sovereignty is the most important thing that the tribes have. And I recognize that and I respect it, and I would absolutely honor it.
James Erb, want to give you an opportunity to tell people, if there was something that you really wish people knew about you, the person, what would that be?
Well, I'm a dad. I talked about my boys already today. I've got a 5 and a 7-year-old, and they are just the light of my life and my wife's as well. And I love being a dad, and I really want to make our community a better place for my kids. I want them to be safe. I want them to feel secure, and I want them and all of their friends and all of the children in our community to have opportunities to succeed and to be the best selves. So that's my focus, is making our community a better place for the next generation while we're keeping those kids safe.
James Erb, City of Bellingham attorney and candidate for county prosecutor in the upcoming 2018 race. Thank you so much for spending time with us on Cascadia News Now today.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you for tuning in to Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham, and we'll be back next week.